Well, as I said, George Johns was one of the political powers in the legislature and in Macon County in this district. And when I went to the legislature to try to get them to have a full recount, they refused to do it. The elections committee of the legislature refused to do it. Because I'm sure the reason was they wanted to keep George Johns there, and I was a stranger and a freshman, so to speak, and that was it. So I determined to run again. And I pointed out to the people that I had been had the election swiped for me, and that's true. Because you just simply cannot. There were 14 precincts involved that there was something fishy with them. Six of them, I told you, I said, had more votes cast than there were members, than there were voters registered. So, but I won by a landslide over George Johns, and I went to the legislature. And immediately got into a fight over, busing and open housing and stuff of this nature, because I don't believe in that. I feel that if I have a pen and I want to sell it to Bill Jones or Tom Smith, it's my business who I want to sell it to, not the federal government, because of color of skin. I think that's unimportant. The point is, if it's my property, it's my freedom involved, I have a right to sell it to whom I please. If I'm a bigot and prejudiced, that's my tough luck for being that way. But it's certainly, the government has not the right to take my freedom away from me. So I put in bills along those lines and had some very bad fights, particularly because one of the reasons I ran was to stop all the radicalism that was going on the campuses. They were burning buildings. For example, they burnt old Maine down Southern Illinois University, $3 million loss. $50,000 loss just in the University of Illinois, the administration building. I don't mean administration, I mean Uni Hall, in the amongst the pictures and portraits of our presidents at the university. They did thousands of dollars worth of damage in the first floor of the administration building, University of Illinois. And I got in the very middle of that. I hired a young black boy to go and report to me what was going on the campuses in Illinois, Southern Illinois, University of Illinois, Eastern Illinois, Northern Illinois, Western Illinois, up here at Normal. And I was very, very active. In fact, the Chicago Tribune said I was the leader of in the legislature in 68, 69, and 70, and 71 of the opposition and the control of the campuses. I put in bills to try to control this, numbers of bills. An example that anyone convicted of rioting and destroying the property of the university could be automatically put off the campus and thrown out. Things of that nature. Some of them passed, some of them did not. I had quite an interesting life. Had many threats against my life. Fact is, a group of five men came to my house from Chicago to kill me. Uh-huh. They caught my daughter, my grandchildren, and a woman friend in front of my house. Threatened to kill them. Had one of my granddaughters in hysterics. So when I was driving back and forth from Springfield, I would never go in the same road to Springfield. I never came back in the same road. I came different roads all the time. Someone loosened the lugs on the back wheels of my car one time. I nearly lost one of my wheels. I had to send for a wrecker to pick it up so I get the lugs tightened up and the wheels back on. One firebomb was thrown at the house here. If it didn't come through a window, fortunately, it hit the brick wall, fell onto the porch, and the cork with the fuse in it popped out far enough away from the gasoline and did not ignite the gasoline, so I was very lucky. My daughter received calls, my son-in-law received calls of threats to burn us up and bomb us out, all because of my activities in relation to the radicalism on the campuses. I took this young black boy, about 21, 22, 23 years old, and I was forced to pay him You have to pay by voucher, but he would not sign the voucher personally, because if you one of the things required on a voucher to be paid is your Social Security number. And since I sent him also to the Black Panthers, the Black Peacetone Nation, the Vice Lords, the Students for a Democratic Society, the Weathermen, he was afraid that this would be a giveaway. And so he wouldn't sign a voucher. So I got one of the secretaries to send in the voucher that I paid him secondhand. Got into a big lot of trouble about that. But on the other hand, my training in the war has always been that a commander must do everything he can to protect the men under him, protect their life and their safety. And I felt it was my duty to do my best to protect his life and his safety, because without any doubt, in my mind still right now, I feel that his life had been in jeopardy if he had been discovered. So I had to go to court and fight it out. It cost thousands of dollars to fight it out. But the Supreme Court of the state of Illinois eventually backed me up and backed me in what I had been doing. And I put in bills, and of course the campus radicalism died down after 1971, 72 or thereabouts, and it's an entire different breed of campus student today than what it used to be. But it was wild. You nearly have to have lived through that and been participant in that to realize that when you hear young men, and some of them came to this house, threatened me, from the universities, when you have young men come and you hear them say, better red than dead, and when you hear them say, a little violence is a good thing, it's ridiculous. For example, they had a big rock festival at Kickapoo Creek, which is between here and Bloomington, and there's some 30,000 of these young people were up there, and I certainly determined I was going to go there and see what was going on with my own eyes. So I didn't shave for a few days, and I met my young investigator he came here to the house, and then we drove up to Kickapoo Creek, which is on the other side of Hayworth, and we went in. They had motorcycle gangs guarding the perimeter of their meeting, with the chains around their middles. They could have used for attacking you one or two. We went down and I watched the drugs being sold, bought. I saw them spaced out with drugs, open sex right there in the cornfield. Part had used to be a cornfield if it's the summer before, and I put in some bills in relation to the control, which became in the law of the state of Illinois, bill for the mass control of groups like this, not denying them the right of assembly, but before they could assemble, they had to see there was proper toilets and proper health standards. See, there was just no rules. And those 30,000, most of them were, half of them I'd say were from Chicago. They brought nothing in relation. They were sleeping maybe on a blanket or a pile of brush down there. And they had only a couple of toilets. And when you had 30,000 boys and girls shacking up together, my goodness, while they would just step outside the tent, they have to go, they just step outside the tent, but they go, boys and girls. I never saw anything like it in my life. And open sex is just really something. And then I had showed movies of this. In the passing of the bill, I showed movies that were taken by our state police of this to help pass the bill. And I suspect the state still has the movies of the activities up there. On the 30th anniversary of the liberation of Paris, I received an invitation from the French embassy in Washington to participate in the ceremonies of the dedication by President Pompidou of France, the dedication of the statue of General Leclerc in honor of his liberation of Paris on August the 23rd, 1944. Now, the statue was erected at the Porte d'Orléans, where Leclerc and the 2nd French Armored Division entered for the liberation of Paris. I went to the dedication, and they had a seat for me not too far from the President of France, Fact is, I nearly started the World War III, because right in front of me was the Ambassade de Chine, that is Ambassador of China. And he had a beautiful little nameplate on the back of his seat. Well, my Third Army background was irresistible to me, and I stole the little plaque with his name, the Ambassade de Chine, as a souvenir of the occasion. Don't regret it a bit. I also have the souvenir bronze medallion of General Leclerc in the house right now that I was given as a participant in this affair. I'll show you that in a minute or two. But before I went, I told the governor of Illinois, that's Ogilvie, what I wanted, and I had the resolution passed by the House giving me the authority to represent the state of Illinois at the dedication, because of our long friendship with France, and because we had the state of Illinois was once really a French colony, and so on. And I took these resolutions with me, and a letter of introduction from the governor, signed by the governor Ogilvie of Illinois, and took them with me and presented them to the government of France. I remember that when I did this, I went to our State Department first, which I found was a protocol to do these kind of things, told them what I wanted to do, and so they took me in a limousine, a driver, and an aide, and drove me over to the State Department of the French government, where I presented these to them. But it was quite an affair that we had. We drank champagne and toasted the United States and the French, so it was well worth going over there to attend this affair. Also, I helped relight the flame at the tomb of the unknown soldier under the Arc de Triomphe on the Champs-Élysées. In all, I have spent 10 years in the legislature of Illinois. I'm not in the legislature right now, but who knows what will happen in the future. It's hard to say. But I certainly have not told all the innumerable experiences, too much time, impossible, in relation to the Army, scouting, the French, the military, General Patton, the G2, adventures or activities in G2, in the legislature, the radicalism. There's just so much that I haven't touched upon that I suppose we could sit here for 5-6 days just telling these kind of things.
Mr. Barchers, you've really had a marvelous life with all, as you say, these exciting adventures.
Oh, yes.
And you have given us a glimpse not only into the history of Decatur, but the whole country, and some of our military activities as well. And I really appreciate what you have given us, and we thank you very much.
That's all right. I might straighten out one little matter in relation to General Patton. He could swear in three languages. I don't think that show of Patton ever showed him quite as it should have. It should have had him swearing a little more than what he did. I probably shouldn't add this on, but I just happened to think of another story about Patton that ought to be recorded somewhere. But during the advance through, after the breakthrough in the advance through France, and we were approaching the Moselle River, during World War I, Patton had been in command after the war, World War I, of this particular area. And he knew some of the people there in this village or small town. So he and his staff went to call on the mayor. And of course, the mayor met him, I suppose, with all the ribbons of state and all that sort of thing, and the consul of this village or town. And they drank a toast or two, I presume, and talked. Now, Patton spoke French very well, so it was possible for him to do these things. Well, anyway, the mayor in the conversation happened to mention that there was still an American soldier buried right out in a trench right outside their cemetery. Well, Patton couldn't believe that. He said, "Why, all my soldiers have been moved from here and have been sent home, or have been sent home. If they're not the cemetery in France, they are in the United States." "Oh no," the mayor said, or words to that effect. He said, "We have one. It'll take." And he said, "Patton says, I want to see it." He said, we've kept it decorated. It's decorated right now with flowers. And he said, we've renewed the cross over the grave every time it needed a new cross. And we put his name on that cross. Well, Patton's staff and the mayor and the council went to the grave. Now, this graveyard, the grave, was just outside of the stone wall of this town cemetery. Sure enough, there was what appeared to be a grave there. There was the cross at the head of the grave. The grave was covered with flowers. The mayor said, no, we kept that ever since 1918. We have kept that grave covered with flowers. Well, we nearly could have had another war with France at that moment, because it's all Patton and his staff could do to keep from laughing. Because, you see, on that cross was printed the name of the unknown American soldier that had been abandoned in France and not taken home. And that name was Abandoned Rear. Now, Army terminology means that is a latrine trench that has been filled in and abandoned. And they took Abandoned Rear for the name of this soldier. And all it was a latrine trench that had been properly covered over, by like regulations say, and naturally abandoned. So for all these years, since World War I to Patton's return to France in the Third Army in World War II, they have been decorating Abandoned Rear.
This concludes Side 5. Please reverse the cassette and rewind for the beginning of Side 6.